Hello, this is Rusty Gaffney, the Prince of Pinot, and you're listening to Pinophile Live. Today, we're featuring Volume 6, Issue 55, dated March 17th, 2008. There were a number of featured articles in this edition, and I'd like to touch briefly on each of them. You know, the Santa Cruz Mountains is kind of an overlooked region for Pinot Noir by many wine enthusiasts. Actually, Pinot Noir has found a very comfortable home in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Each March, I look forward to traveling to the region for the Pinot Paradise Weekend, which is the annual Pinot Noir festival held in this mountain community. Production here is still small. There's only around 1,200 acres cultivated. And most of the wine is snapped up by locals who are in the know and can appreciate the wines. The roots of wine growing in the Santa Cruz Mountains actually go back over 150 years. George Jarvis was the first one to plant grapes in the Vine Hill area of Santa Cruz County. Many Santa Cruz Mountain winemaking pioneers followed, and their names reflect the storied history lesson of California Pinot Noir. Names like Charles LaFranc of New Almaden Vineyards, Leland Stanford, Augustine Harris-Thay of Crystal Springs, Paul Maison of Paul Maison Champagne Company, Martin Ray of Mount Eden, David Bruce of David Bruce Winery, Dick Graft of Mount Eden, Mary Edwards, who got her start at Mount Eden, and of course, Randall Graham of Bonnie Doon. Now, the Santa Cruz Mountains viticultural appellation was federally approved in 1981, and it was one of the first American viticultural appellations to be defined by geographical, altitudinal, and climatic factors. The appellation includes the Santa Cruz Mountain Range, extending from Half Moon Bay in the north to Mount Madonna north of Gilroy in the south. The east and west boundaries are defined by elevation, including mountainous land above 400 feet on the western side and from 400 to 800 feet on the eastern side. The large appellation rambles for something like 380,000 acres in three counties, including Santa Cruz County to the west, Santa Clara County to the east, and San Mateo County to the north. Santa Clara County has the most acreage. Most of the vineyards in the Santa Cruz Mountain appellation are small, 1 to 20 acres. The largest grower, Beauregard Vineyards, manages about 100 acres. Because of the limited number of vines, many wineries source grapes from outside the appellation. But it is the wines that are made from Santa Cruz Mountain fruit that are the most prized. The reason is that the Santa Cruz Mountains is a very appealing coastal climate for Pinot Noir. You have warm days, cool nights, coastal fog in the morning, soft breezes in the afternoon. All this leads to complex, balanced flavors, food-friendly acidity, and age-worthiness. Out of all the total acreage planted in Santa Cruz Mountains, only about a quarter, or about 300 acres, is planted to Pinot Noir. There's a little bit more actually planted to Chardonnay. And Chardonnay should not be ignored because the ones from this area are quite impressive as well. There are about 75 Pinot Noir vineyards in the Santa Cruz Mountains, located primarily on the western mountain ridges above Monterey Bay, close to the coastal and cooling fog influence. Located at elevations of 800 to 2,600 feet, most of them are smaller than 15 acres. The soils are quite varied throughout the appellation and include decomposed rock, clay, loam, limestone. The result is frequently a mineral character in the wines, whatever that is. And there's a lot of controversy regarding the term minerality, whether soil characteristics can actually travel up the vine into the fruit. Probably a lot of minerality is secondary to the winemaking. But nevertheless, this minerality seems to be something that consistently appears in many of the Santa Cruz Mountain wines. The Pinot Noir vineyards in the Santa Cruz Mountains can be grouped into five subregions. You have the Watsonville area, you have Corralitos, the Summits, Bend Lomond, and Portola Valley. The 2008 San Francisco Chronicle International Wine Competition was held a short while ago, and Santa Cruz Mountain wineries were awarded 7 gold, 7 silvers, and 5 bronze medals. For Pinot Noir made from the Appalachians grapes. The wineries that won gold medals were Soquel Vineyards, Storrs Winery, Windy Oaks Estate Vineyard and Winery, and Hallcrest Vineyards. So I think, you know, these wines are worthy of your attention. I've certainly enjoyed a number of them from this region. They tend to have lovely aromatics, luscious red and dark fruit flavors, easily approachable tannins, lively acidity, and they're usually packaged into a lighter to medium-bodied style. And they represent usually good value. They're not overpriced. Success hasn't gone to the heads of most of the winemakers in this region. So even though the wines remain a relative secret, I would suggest that you take a look. I would suggest you attend the Pinot Paradise event, which comes at this time each year. And if not, go on your own and explore. And I think you'll be easily charmed. The area is still very unspoiled. The tasting rooms are very welcoming. You won't run into any limousines on the roads in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Another event that I'd like to talk to you about is the Pinot Noir Summit. The 6th annual Pinot Noir Summit was held at Fort Mason Center in San Francisco in early March of this year. I had participated in a number of the preliminary judging sessions, which were held back in December and January. And I enjoy judging wine in this event because only 32 wines are judged each day, and that's separated over several hours. The problem with so many wine competitions is that the judges are required to taste upwards of 100 wines a day. And the fact is, you really can't give the wines their due when you're just rushing through them. So this type of testing allows more time and more thorough evaluation of each wine. There were about 270 Pinot Noirs entered from all over the world. The majority of them were from California. And at this Pinot Noir Summit event, the final 40 wines were presented to the public. And it's a very interesting event in that the final 40 wines are bagged and presented to the consumer in a blind format. Consumers taste the wines and judge the wines, and then the results are announced of the professional judging panel and also the results from the consumers. And it's interesting to see the differences between the two results. In addition, the judging, both from the consumer and the judging panel, is kept separate between men and women. And again, it's interesting to see the differences that arise. For the professional judging panel, for example, the winners for the men were the 2005 Adobe Roads Sonoma Coast Pinot Noir, the 2005 Heart of the Mountain Santa Cruz Mountains Pinot Noir, the 2005 David Bruce Santa Cruz Mountains Pinot Noir, and the 2004 Sonoma Coast Vineyard Sonoma Coast Pinot Noir. In contrast with the women judging panel, there was only one wine that overlapped. The first place wine for the women was the 2005 David Bruce Santa Cruz Mountains Pinot Noir. But the women also awarded medals to the 2005 Elliott Family Cellars Three Plumes Russian River Valley Pinot Noir and the 2006 Ardiri Napa Carneros Pinot Noir. The consumer choices, again, were a bit different. The Adobe Road Sonoma Coast Pinot Noir showed well to the men consumers, as did the Sonoma Coast Vineyard Sonoma Coast Pinot Noir. The women consumers also seemed to like the Sonoma Coast Vineyard Sonoma Coast Pinot Noir, but also enjoyed the 2005 Griffon California Pinot Noir, that's G-R-Y-P-H-O-N, and the 2005 Bianchi Gary Vineyard Santa Maria Valley Pinot Noir. The Bianchi wine is worth noting in that prior to this final event, I had tasted the Bianchi Gary Vineyard Santa Maria Valley Pinot Noir and highly touted it in the Pinot Fall. When I went to the Pinot Noir Summit, I tasted all of the wines blind, and this was one of my favorite, well, I guess it was my favorite wine of the final 40. So it was a vindication for me in that I had tasted the wine non-blind and loved it, and then tasted the wine blind and loved it as well. All of the 40 wines which made the final were quite good, and all of the results are available on the Affairs of the Vine website at www.affairsofthevine.com. At this event, I hosted, or should I say moderated, a panel which was entitled Discovering New Stars Along the Pinot Trail. And there were four wineries featured: B Vineyards and Habitat in the Russian River Valley, the owners being Gerald and Sean Bybee; Kutch Wines, which was represented by owner and winemaker Jamie Kutch; RN Estate, which was represented by owner and winemaker Roger Nicholas; and Three Sticks Wines, which was represented by assistant winemaker Tracy Bledsoe. I recorded a podcast of this seminar, and this will be available on my website later this summer. Now, what about new stars? Well, it's almost impossible to keep up with. Not a week goes by that I don't uncover at least one new producer of Pinot Noir in California and Oregon these days. Everyone seems to be searching for the next great star producer of Pinot Noir, and I don't find that unusual because, after all, what are the first three letters of the word news spell? Well, they spell new, and so news is new stuff, and people are always after the newest thing. So who's going to be the next Sea Smoke or Costa Brown? Finding and identifying new Pinot Noir producers is a challenge because when they start out, they're very small boutique operations. They have little or no marketing budget. They often make less than 1,000 cases, and they may or may not send samples to major wine publications for review. In addition, winemakers by nature tend to be a bit on the shy side, unassuming. Promotion is usually not their long suit. How do I find new stars, new producers? Well, sometimes a new producer contacts me and tells me about their new project, sends me samples, invites me to visit and taste. In most cases, I really prefer visiting them and tasting the wines with them, as well as tasting them on my own, because really to enjoy Pinot Noir, especially ones that you have not heard about, you really need to understand the story behind the wine. You need to have a feel for the people and what has gone into the production of the wine. I think this is gives you the most appreciation. In other cases, I might meet the producer at a Pinot Noir festival, such as the Pinot Paradise, which I mentioned earlier, or at a wine tasting event. Other sources include retailers, the wine press, and wine blogs. What do I look for in a new winery? Well, there are many factors to consider, but most importantly, I look at the vineyard sources and vineyard management, the winemaker's background and experience. But a caveat here is that many accomplished winemakers have learned more by experience than by classroom study. So you can't always go by a UC Davis degree. I also look at the owner's commitment, and I look at the approachability and availability of the winery principals, that is, the owner, the winemaker, and so forth, to the consumer. Because when you recommend a wine, you want people to be able to access the wine and also access the people that make the wine. Of course, the quality of the wine in the bottle counts for a lot. In this same issue, I highlighted three producers who had released some 2006 Pinot Noirs, which I thought were absolutely terrific. I kidded about it in the newsletter. I said, confiscate your wife's Nordstrom credit card and subscription to Vogue magazine. Cancel your kid's cell phone account. Discontinue any superfluous insurance premiums. Start riding your bike to work. Cancel the gardener. Tell your wife to cut her own hair. Start sending your kids to public school. Whatever it is, save as much money as you can to buy some of these wonderful wines. I highlighted these wines because they had just been released and were still available in most cases on the market. The first producer that I was impressed by was Drew Wines. Jason Drew has been making wine since 1991, when he helped his uncle plant a vineyard in the Napa Valley. He received his winemaking training in both California and Australia and formed his Drew label in 2000 with his wife Molly, when he was associate winemaker at Babcock Vineyards and Winery in the Santa Rita Hills. In 2003, he left Babcock to concentrate on his own label, and in 2004 purchased a ridgetop property overlooking the Anderson Valley to the east and the Pacific Ocean 3 miles to the west. A winery was built on the property, and the Drew's first estate vineyard was planted. Currently, Drew sources grapes from Santa Barbara County, Anderson Valley, Sonoma Coast, and Yorkville Highlands. I tasted the current releases, four of them anyway, and I was stoked. They were all good. The one that really stood out to me was the Weir, W-E-I-R, Vineyard, Yorkville Highlands Pinot Noir. This may be an appellation that you're not particularly familiar with. It's in the southern part of Mendocino County. This vineyard is interesting in that its 15 acres are planted with many rare DRC and Rocchioli selections. I like this wine a lot and found it very admirable for its perfect balance and purity, and was the best wine I had ever sampled from this appellation. I kiddingly said, hawk your kids for this one. Drew Wines are available from the website, www.drewwines.com. The second producer is Halleck Vineyards. I've written about Halleck Vineyards and touted their wines in the past in the Pinophile, and I recently tasted through the 2006 releases, and I found the wines quite stellar. There were four releases, beginning with the Three Sons Cuvée, Russian River Valley, then the Clone 828 Sonoma Coast Pinot Noir, then the Hallberg Vineyard Russian River Valley Pinot Noir, and finally the Farm Vineyard Russian River Valley Pinot Noir. It's hard to single out one of these wines because you really can't go wrong with any of them. They're still young, and for the most part, needs some time to evolve. The Three Sons Cuvée is the most approachable and is the friskiest wine that you can enjoy soonest. The Halleck wines are carefully crafted and are consistently of high quality. The wines are available on the website at www.hallockvineyards.com. The third producer is Ressler Cellars. Brothers Richard and Roger Ressler founded Ressler Cellars in 2000, and that's spelled R-O-E-S-S-L-E-R. And together with talented winemakers Wells Guthrie and Scott Shapley, they craft marvelous Pinot Noirs from appellations throughout California. I recently tasted two of their releases and was really impressed. The 2005 Savoy Vineyard Anderson Valley Pinot Noir and the 2005 Clos Pepe Vineyard Santa Rita Hills Pinot Noir. The Clos Pepe Vineyard Pinot Noir was striking. There were utterly charming aromas of freshly baked cherry pie with a hot brown crust, delicious stone fruits, silky mouthfeel, and a clean, scented, and lip-smacking finish. The wine really has the whole package, really nothing to critique, just pure, unadulterated drinking pleasure. I felt this was one of the best wines I had ever tried from Clos Pepe Vineyard. Everything you could hope for, and some things you didn't know to ask for. Wrestler Cellar wines are available on their website at www.wrestlercellars.com. One final note is that we finally have a new book on Burgundy. As you probably know, most of the texts on Burgundy are outdated. And Clive Coates has just released the sequel to his Cote d'Or, A Celebration of the Great Wines of Burgundy, which was first published 10 years ago. It's been thoroughly revised and updated, and it includes reviews of all the major vintages in Burgundy from 2006 back to 1959, and includes thousands of tasting notes of the most notable wines. Clive Coates is a master wine who has spent much of his last 30 years exploring and tasting in Burgundy. This is a book that's highly recommended. It can be pre-ordered on Amazon.com for only $37 and change. There's one other item you might check out, and that is a irreverent newsletter that's published by W.R. Tisch, a New Yorker, who publishes a newsletter at www.wineforall.com. And his companion site, www.wineskewer.com, currently includes a hilarious spoof titled 100-Point Hall of Shame. And in this feature, he talks about the absurdity and the inconsistencies of wine scoring. He says, quote, "These stark naked numbers, which remain no more or less than a single human being's opinion, are imbibed with Giroux-esque significance and tattoo-like permanence. Ratings are the wine world's equivalent of tabloid pablum, the very opposite of intelligent discourse, the obsolete relic of last century's coming-of-age wine mark." Check Tisch out. You'll have a good laugh.